Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
And good afternoon and welcome. You are in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. If you're catching us later on, you can catch us via the archives or the podcast. Each and every Wednesday, 3 o'clock is when we are live as we start into what is not officially the first week of the 2010 season. That comes back really to the end of February, beginning of March is when the NFL year begins. But once you get the draft class in, you start feeling like it is the new season and the Chiefs draft is over. You look around, of course, grades mixed all over the place. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people can't figure it out. Some people don't know what to think. Rick Goslin from the Dallas Morning News, who's covered the NFL and the draft for a long, long time, loved the Chiefs drafts, had them as an A. I saw the ones that had it as a C-, a D, different varying grades. I got a lot of respect for Rick Goslin and the work he does. He has it as an A. I'm not a big guy and slapping out draft grades, but perhaps I'll throw out a grade for the Chiefs draft here a little bit later on, here in our next segment. Josh Looney's going to join me. You see his work here at KCChiefs.com. Did a great job for the website covering the draft from top to bottom. And we'll talk to Josh Looney and just get kind of a roundtable discussion about the Chiefs draft, our thoughts on what it is. We'll go back and forth about how this came about, other options the Chiefs could have done. I will tell you there are certain players that I will be following. A couple of things I'll lay out there. Everybody has an opinion. All right, it's like your elbow and everything else on your body. Everybody's got an opinion. The key is, how does it play out in the long run? A lot of people love to lob out an opinion or slap a grade on a draft right now and then never revisit it. First of all, you can't accurately grade a draft till you get at least 3 years, if not 5 years down the road. And those grades will change. The good grade on the Chiefs draft from last year is not the highest in the world. Those guys step out and improve in year two. That draft grade may get better. It may get worse. Only time will tell as the draft classes come about. But the early returns on the Chiefs draft from a year ago, well, there's some guys that really got to step up. Otherwise, that draft grade is going to be a poor one. This draft grade, a lot of people really liked what the Chiefs did. A lot of people really liked Eric Berry. So they're getting good draft grades. Well, you know what? That grade will be meaningless if Eric Berry and the rest of this draft class can't step on the field and make people play. The draft grade you get 5 years from now, much more important than whatever the draft grade you get now is. To me, it's more important to talk about, one, how the players fit in, what is the mindset, what is the plan, what is the approach of the organization to apply these football players to making a better football team, and then secondarily, what were the other options that were available? There are certain players that I will always track with a mindset towards the 2010 draft, track back to the 2010 draft. In other words, Eric Berry was the selection of the Chiefs, but how does a Russell Okung or a Rolando McClain or a Brandon Graham do in their career here moving forward? Guys that looked like on paper they could have been good fits for the Chiefs as well, but the Chiefs chose to go in another direction. You know, getting excited and talking about, well, trading up to get Sam Bradford for your franchise quarterback, that's the route you should have gone. Hey, would the Rams have done it? Could you have made a deal to make that happen? Should you have made it happen? To me, that's too much of a stretch. But what you can track and don't even have to stretch to do it are players that were available when the organization had a pick and they chose somebody else instead of them. That will be one of the things that I think is one of the best ways to go ahead and evaluate the draft here moving forward. One, the production that the organization gets out of the players they did draft, and then remembering, noting the players that were available that they chose not to select, what is their production like in the future? And keep in mind, every team's draft will be affected by how good their coaching staff is, how good the players around the ones that were drafted this year are in helping them become the best football players they can. You got to coach them after you've drafted them. You don't just draft a player and he is what he is. You've got to develop him and you've got to scheme to put him in a position to use the skills that he's got, the talents that he's got, to the best ability. In other words, if you draft a guy that's a 244-pound outside linebacker and you ask him to play nose tackle in your scheme and he continually gets blown off the ball by 320-pound centers and double teams by guards, take him off his feet, and you look back at that draft and you say, well, that guy's not any good. Boy, he couldn't handle the pressure. He couldn't handle the center. He was too small. Or, no, you're an idiot for taking a 245-pound outside linebacker and asking him to play nose tackle. A part of the equation in whether or not a draft class goes on to be successful or not, a big part of it is going to be the coaching staff, is going to be can they coach them the techniques that are needed in the NFL, and can they put them into schemes that maximize their ability? Now, clearly no one is going to draft an outside linebacker and ask him to play nose tackle in the NFL. I make an exaggeration to make the point clear. All right, but when you take players, Eric Berry at safety, you've got to maximize his talents, whether that's great coverage, whether that's the ability to step up in the run, whether it's the ability to do both and mix it up so that the quarterback doesn't know what Eric Berry's going to do. A big part of whether or not Eric Berry will be a success and every other draft pick in this draft class will come down to the coaching staff's ability to maximize what it is Eric Berry does best. And we'll see if that happens. A couple other points before we bring in Josh Looney. One, the draft, seven players. They had eight picks. They move up to get Moyaki, the tight end from Iowa. One of the extra picks, so a pick, two picks really, a fifth-round pick, along with the fourth-round pick goes towards Moyaki. So always keep that in mind as you evaluate that. The Chiefs moving up to get their guy. Seven overall picks out of eight selections that they had going into this draft. Four of them on the defensive side, three of them on the offensive side. I wouldn't have been surprised that if there were eight picks, it might have been a 5-3 split, but they used the picks. A couple of things about this, I think, in the end, whether it was by design or it just happened, needs were filled by the Chiefs in this draft. And a lot of teams say, well, we're going to take the best player available. I think every team would agree reaching for need creates problems and creates mistakes in this draft. I don't think this team had to reach for needs, but I do think they filled needs. Now, whether that was coincidence or you just say, hey, there were a lot of needs for this team, it was impossible for them to go through the draft and not fill needs. Either way, a lot of football players that look like they should be able to get on the field very quickly for this team because from the first five picks are all need spots for this team. The last two picks are probably more on the developmental side, special team side, as guys that could grow into football players that can make a serious difference for this football team. And the other thing is we talked about the history of Scott Pioli in this draft. First round in particular, and the second and third rounds, we discussed how he had gone about drafting in the first round. Did not break new ground. He had taken a safety before in his time, 2007, with Brandon Merriweather to the New England Patriots, so it was not foreign territory. Although as far as his top 10 picks, this was the fourth time he's made a selection in the top 10. It was the first time it was not a front seven player, but all four of his top 10 picks have continued to be defensive players. First time Richard Seymour with a number 6 overall pick, Gerard Mayo with a 10th overall selection, Tyson Jackson with a 3rd overall selection, and then this year, 5th overall pick safety, Eric Berry. He has gone defense high when he's had a high pick every single time, and the Chiefs did again go defense under Scott Pioli with this pick. Now, does that mean every time he has a high pick, which obviously, as Chiefs fans, we hope he never has a pick that high again, unless it comes from a trade that's made and it's somebody else's draft pick. Does it mean he'll go defense each and every time? No, it doesn't. But to me, it establishes a track record that defense is a priority to this general manager. And when he looks at the board, defense oftentimes, especially high, is a spot that he will go. We're going to break it down front and back, top to bottom. Josh Looney joins me next here in the Red Zone.
Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster. The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. more ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job. And we'll win this game, and the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20, he's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com. Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday, a very busy Wednesday. We bring in Chiefs insider Josh Looney. You know him. You love him. You listen to him. You see him. He is Chiefs insider Josh Looney. Check out his work here at kcchiefs.com. If you have not seen his work, you need to start checking it out. He does a great job here on the website, tweeting. I know
vlogging.
Yes, I know I am a follower of one Josh Looney on the Twitter. What is your Twitter account in case anybody does that?
It's very difficult. At Josh Looney.
Okay, there you go.
L-O-O-N-E-Y.
N-E-Y. So you can follow and keep all your latest Chiefs news as well as in-game. I know you're quite busy on the in-game tweets, so if you're a Twitter fan as well. But Josh does a great job. I thought it'd be good to get you in here because I know how well you cover this team, how well you follow it. Let's talk some theories about this draft and what your thoughts are. I'm not a big grade guy right now because I think it's a waste of time. Everybody throws out a grade. 4 years from now, it's forgotten, and everybody craps on the bad picks and celebrates the good picks. Are you a grade guy? Did you put a grade out?
No, I'm not a grade guy, but I am intrigued by them specifically. You know, you look at Rick Gosselin, who gives the Chiefs an A+, and you can go down the line and you get your B- from Mel Kiper, et cetera, et cetera. I think that
– Who else? Did anybody else? I thought I saw somebody who had like a C- or something.
I believe Fox Sports had one of the lower grades. I believe it was a C-. Okay. And then you get your guys like Peter King and Clark Judge who won't give a grade, but they'll say, hey, Gosselin's one of the best in the business and gives the Chiefs a perfect. Perfect score. Exactly. And some people that see the Chiefs and go, well, Rick Gosselin, okay, he's the Dallas Morning News, but he used to be the star. There's a homer. Well, I say not the case. He gave the Chiefs a big fat D in 2009. And then 2008, he gave an A+ also, but that's the year that everybody gave the Chiefs an A+.
And let's take a look back at that because that's important, because let's look back at that 2008 draft. Glenn Dorsey, Brandon Albert, Brandon Flowers, Brad Cottom, Jamal Charles, and DeJuan
Brandon Carr.
Who was the other third, the safety? DeJuan Morgan.
DeJuan Morgan was
and
the
then
third. Yeah.
Brandon Carr in the fifth round. Every one of those guys we just named is still on this team. Albert, Dorsey, Flowers, Charles, and Cottom at the end of the year, along with Carr, are all starters That's a pretty good draft. Now you can, and that's even with a system, because I think it's important to understand when you throw these grades out. That's even with a system change on defense from a 4-3 to a 3-4. You've still got these guys playing a new regime, a new coach, a new general manager, a new set of eyes looking at this, and you get a guy who was outgained only by Chris Johnson in the last eight games, and Jamal Charles, a stud runner in Jamal Charles in the third round, a left tackle, a starting end, defensive end, and we'll see what Glenn Dorsey is. We know this is a big year for Glenn Dorsey.
It's a huge year for him.
But I think if you were to give a good grade to that draft, you would stand by that grade today based on how they have performed for 2 years.
I think it's fair. I think that the funny thing about that grade is, though, the grade based off probably didn't factor in Jamal Charles at that point. It was the fact that, well, Glenn Dorsey fell to five. Oh, my gosh, mm-hmm. The Chiefs got him. Then they traded up and got their tackle concerned, and they got Brandon Flowers up and early in the second round. So those three picks, I think, were what generated the A+. Then you look back, okay, there's a stockpile picks behind there. Well, one of those stockpile picks was Jamal Charles, and mm-hmm. now that's really what brings that draft to the top. Because if you don't get him in there, then you have some debate and some questions. Now, as you said, the guys are still on the team. But, I think fans want to see more production out of Glenn Dorsey. I think he had a much better season in year two than he did in year one. Mm-hmm. I also think it's tough to judge by sacks, particularly in a 3-4 defense. I thought he was much quicker off the ball this year. But that said, as a top five pick, people want to see sacks. They want to see what Tyson Jackson last year. And that's just the way it is and the way it is in the NFL today. But I think Jamal Charles, I mean, there's your that's your breaker of that draft right there, especially if he continues to do what he did last year.
And we'll get to the multiple picks in a round, and that's what it enables you to do. And I've said this, whether it's the Jared Allen trade, and you look at those picks because, the two-thirds were Cottom and DeJuan Morgan, you've got to look at how do they handle that whole round. To me, you evaluate based on a round. If you've only got one pick in the round, then that round is just one guy. Mm-hmm. But when you've got two picks or three picks, did you use those picks to trade up? This year they did. In the fifth, they used one of the picks to move their fourth round pick up into the third and get to Moiaki. And I think they had three picks 2 years ago, and it gave them the chance to not say, look, if they'd only had one, would they have just taken Brad Cottom? Would they have just taken Jamal Charles? We don't know. But with three picks, it enabled them to view it as we're going to address multiple holes, and they come away with the Jamal Charles. So, I think it's, everyone wants to just tab. This guy went at this spot, so that's it. Or if you make a trade, whoever it was Houston took with that fourth pick, well, it's Moiaki versus that guy. No, there's more to it than just that. So this draft is about more than just the individual names that are there. It's about what they did with the selections. And it goes back to last year and what they did to get them. And moving Tony Gonzalez, that will be a part of how you evaluate round number two. Not just Tony Gonzalez versus, Javier Arenas, but the fact that Tony Gonzalez was part of what gave them that extra ammo. If 3 years from now, Tony Gonzalez has retired, and Arenas is a Pro Bowl kick returner and a nickelback on this team with five interceptions, that's a pretty good trade. I mean, that worked out well for this team. And the flip side is if the Falcons are polishing a Vince Lombardi trophy after the 11 season with Tony Gonzalez catching 110 yards and two touchdowns before he retires, I think Atlanta will say, that was a pretty good trade. That's how it can be a win-win, and you've got to look beyond just that name at that pick. This is what it means.
Well, you bring up a good point. Pick 50 and Tony Gonzalez, you talk about compiling picks. This is exactly what happened in this year's draft. The Chiefs have three guys they like at number 36, and they have to think, and Scott Pioli told this to Clark Judge on CBS Sportsline. It came out, the article is out today. Chiefs fans can go check it out. There's three guys they liked at 36. They had to ask themselves, which guy of these three do we think has the least likely of a shot of being there at 50? That was Dexter McCluster. So they pulled the trigger on McCluster. So there's two guys left on the board. The Chiefs try and trade up from 50. Deal doesn't get done. Who that other guy on the board is, I don't know. I wrote a lot about Linval Joseph. That guy got picked at 46. Maybe that was him. Maybe it wasn't. But whoever that guy was, he got picked somewhere between 37 and 49. And the next guy of that list of those three when they were at 36 was Javier Arenas. They end up getting him, and they get him because they stockpile the picks. And that's a perfect example of it's not just one pick in the round, but when you have multiple picks in the round, you can play around a little bit, and you can make a better decision, I think, for the long term of your football team by having multiple picks in a single round. round.
I'm a big fan of always trading back and getting more picks, trading down in rounds, but also trading players for picks and getting multiple picks. I'd rather have a couple of picks in later rounds than just it all be on one guy, but you've got to look at it as its whole. Let's start with it. Let's start breaking down the players, and let's start with Eric Berry, which I know we did a little bit on draft night. You did a lot, and I know I said in one segment with you. Eric Berry goes number five to the Chiefs. You know, to me, the guys that will always be kind of linked at that spot, as I mentioned, are Brandon Graham, Rolando McClain, and Russell Okung. They were guys that looked like they could have been fits for needs that the Chiefs have. They didn't go that route. They went Eric Berry. They clearly have a need at safety. He was, by almost everyone's account, I know Mike Mayock liked Thomas from Texas over him.
Right.
But on every other account that I saw, I didn't see one other person that didn't say Eric Berry was the best safety in this class. You like this? You think this was as good a job as they could have done at number five?
I do like it. I will say I'm surprised at them taking a safety at five. Beforehand, I didn't think that was what's going to happen, just from Pioli's history at that pick and the offensive tackle depth that was in this draft. And when Pioli comes out and says, well, he was number one on our board all along, I'm like, okay, well, what do I know? You know, but the common misconception, I think, here was that it was between Eric Berry and Russell Okung when that pick came. And the why I say misconception is because at offensive line at 36, the Chiefs don't go offensive line. They don't go it at 50. They don't go offensive tackle at all in the draft, and they don't go offensive line until they take Asamoah at number 68 overall. So if it was down to we need a tackle, we need a safety, I'm not so sure. I think the Chiefs would have gone. There was some plenty of good tackles on the board. I think only five tackles have been selected by the time the Chiefs came at 36 again. So that tells me there's some confidence in Brandon Albert.
Absolutely.
There's some confidence in Ryan O'Callaghan, and that the offensive tackle isn't as perceived of a need in-house as it might have been by every media outlet that you listen to externally from here at Kansas.
Barry Richardson in Duke, take your pick. They like the depth. They're confident, at least in the depth of the tackle, that they were not in a position, we've got to go get an offensive tackle. It should be pointed out, and everybody, you can get this information here at kcchiefs.com when you look at their transactions. The 11 undrafted free agents that they've signed, write those down, print that out, keep it with your draft class, because that's part of the equation as well. Yep. There's only seven rounds. If this were the old days and there were 12 or even way back to 15 and 20 rounds, you know, these are guys that would have been drafted. The Chiefs prioritized them. They have dollars that they can spend on those guys, spend more to get those guys into the mix as opposed to what another team would spend. And so that's part of this class as well, will be those undrafted players, and we'll see if they fit in there. We're offensive linemen. Prevalent in that, and there were some defensive linemen as well. And I'm with you. Scott Pioli's never taken an offensive lineman higher than 32 in his career. Logan Mankins was the highest offensive lineman he's ever drafted. I think that speaks to a philosophy, that technique and the fact that it is the whole unit and not just one guy that's going to make your ability on that offensive line, and it's cap management. How much money can you put into that unit? We saw the Chiefs have the greatest offensive line. I think maybe the greatest offensive line the NFL has ever seen. In the Vermeil years, it was definitely the most expensive offensive line anyone's ever seen. And they didn't have enough money to go out and get the defensive players that they needed. And that's part of this equation as well. Not just who was the best workout warrior and had the best tape. You're building, and this is what Scott Pioli says, a team. The right 53, not necessarily just the right guy.
Well, specific to Eric Berry at the pick number five, what do I like about him, Seren? I like his versatility. I think that this is the common theme. Now, there's now 15 defensive backs on this roster as of today. Who knows where that will be in training camp? I think I counted, you can make an argument of 12 of them possibly playing multiple positions, whether that's nickel and corner, maybe that's safety and corner. Yeah, a guy like Maurice Leggett's a perfect example. He's played, started at corner in the first game for Flowers, then moved to nickel, and then was playing safety before he got injured. Carr's a bigger corner, could maybe move inside. You got Donald Washington, who took reps at safety later on in the season once there was an injury issue there late in the year. Travis Daniels has actually started a game at safety earlier in his NFL career. And then you've got Eric Berry, who can man up on a slot guy. He can play center field. He can come up in the box and tackle as well. So I think that what the thing to watch this offseason and starting on May 17th when OTAs open is, where are these guys lining up? Because right now, I think you if you tried to put out a depth chart, you'd be fooling yourself because there's no idea what Romeo Crennel is going to do and how the depth he's going to have line up. I think there'll be different guys playing different positions than we're accustomed to seeing, and I think it's going to be a lot of competition at that.
There are different ways to play the 3-4, an attacking 3-4, which is what I would call what Pittsburgh does, which is about their front seven and getting into the backfield, pressuring the quarterback, trying to make plays in the backfield. And I think then there's the Romeo Crennel's approach that they had at New England, which is more about their coverages. And they're going to play a little bit more straight up front, and then they're going to disguise things and try to get after the quarterback from and back. And I think Eric Berry gives them that possibility. I think it's clear that there was an assessment that, all right, we didn't pressure the quarterback enough. It was better this year than it was the year before. We didn't pressure him enough, but I think obviously there was also an acknowledgement that maybe we didn't cover well enough. And if we cover a little better, give those guys up front a little more time to get there, we can accomplish what we need to accomplish in the pass rush by having better coverage skills, by having better coverage people, disguising what it is. So it's not so easy for the quarterback to go, A, B, C, bang, I'm ready, we're moving, there's 7 yards, let's go. I mean, the more you can put a team in, and I think this will speak to their run defense as well, the more you can put a team in third and long, the better your coverage is going to be as opposed to third and one. And that's the beauty of football. Is everything is intertwined with everything else. If you can cover better, you've got more time for your pass rush to get there. Flip side is, get to the quarterback quicker, less time you've got to cover. Stop a team on first and 10, make it second and 10, you've got a better chance of getting them off the field in a 3-and-out than if you give up 7 yards on the run, and now you're looking at second and 3. Now a team can say, we're going to take a shot downfield, because we know we can come back on third down and get it. I mean, second and 1 is a dream down for every offensive coordinator, because they can do anything they want and know that they've still got a high percentage chance of converting on third and 1. So when we talk about coverage, your coverage will get better if your run defense is better. Stop them on first down, and then your coverage people get better. Eric Berry should help on both coverage, but also in the run game, because that's his book, is that he can do it all. And Romeo Crennel, and I hear everybody saying Ed Reed, and I don't know about you, that always makes me nervous. Yeah. When let's compare him to the best that's out there. Nah, let's start someplace else and
it's
say
it's going to happen though. When you're a top 5 pick, fair or not, that's what's going to be put on you, and it's unfair to these guys, but it's the reality. When you're spending a pick that high and you're getting that money, they're going to say, well, you better perform it. This guy that's kind of like you in the league and is at the top of his game.
And I'm not asking anybody to shed a tear for Eric Berry. The money will do, you know, if he struggles and the boos are down, the money will help him, will help comfort him at night. But I would say, let's take a look at Rodney Harrison and how productive he was in New England when he was past his athletic prime, how productive he was for Romeo Crennel in New England and then beyond. I think that ability to use him, then let's say, okay, Eric Berry is a much better athlete at this point in his career. Let's go Rodney. We want better than Rodney Harrison out of this, and we'll see. If the future ends up being Ed Reed, well, he's going to need the type of front seven. I think this is the other thing that comes into it. And you talk Ed Reed, you talk Troy Polamalu, there are very good front sevens in front of those guys that allow them to basically freelance and do all the things they do. The front seven of the Chiefs will have to get better. For Eric Berry to look like Ed Reed, the front seven of the Chiefs have to play like Baltimore's front seven.
No, that's definitely the key, and that's the same reason that Scott Pioli took Tyson Jackson, a guy at that position. Whether or not you're pleased with the way Jackson played last year, that was the philosophy behind drafting him as the number 3 overall pick in 2008. We're running a 3-4 defense. We don't have the athletes and the personnel to run it right now, but we have to build it. So what do we need at our core? Well, we need to build our front 8, our front 7. So he gets a defensive end in Tyson Jackson, who hopefully can be a 2-gap player, can be a run stopper and hold his spot up there in the front line.
Josh Looney, Chiefs insider here at KCChiefs.com, is with us. We will take a break, come back. More draft analysis here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels, that a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine, that studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster, more ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Hey, Chiefs fans. I'm Josh Looney of kcchiefs.com.
And I am the internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but kcchiefs.com is legit.
I know. At kcchiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. We're talking NFL draft, obviously, specifically with the Kansas City Chiefs in mind. Soren Petro with you. Chiefs insider Josh Looney is here. All right, round number two. This is where it got interesting for me on the Kansas City Chiefs. I've said this a couple of times on my radio show. Dexter McCluster, to me, is a guy that you said is going to go in the second round. I saw some people projecting him into the bottom of the first.
Late one, yep.
Yeah, but for the most part, was going to go in the second round and maybe into the early third. I said, look, if his name came up at that time, nobody would be shocked. But no matter what team you put his name next to, you were going to be surprised. Except for maybe the Raiders, because nobody ever really has any idea what the Raiders are doing. After that, I think you would have been surprised whatever team took him, but you're not surprised at where he went. And so I think he comes to Kansas City, so the surprise is here, and people who wanted the O-tackle, wanted more offensive line, which I can't stress enough how much better that offensive line looked in the second half of the year when they cut down their sacks, the run totals were up, Jamal Charles came in, everything looked better. O'Callaghan and Wade Smith, who's not here anymore, but Ryan Lilja is. Those guys got into the starting lineup, and that offensive line looked better. But a lot of people were thinking, and I said this, I would have taken Russell Okung up there at number five because I believe in tackles. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are thinking you got to go O-line. And if you don't go O-line, the run defense had a lot of problems. You got to take a big run plugger, be it Terrence Cody. You got to take a middle linebacker. It's got to be somebody to help that run defense out, help the front seven. Instead, they go Dexter McCluster. Again, surprise that it's this team and surprised that it would be any team. But when you think about the success that a Wes Welker's had, that the Arizona Cardinals had, of course, where Todd Haley came from, that they have had with their different receivers and different looks and their ability to move the football, I think you get a window into the fact that, they think this guy is a playmaker. Were you surprised that he was the guy?
I was surprised. I liked the pick from the start. I'll tell you why. I guess I'll tell a little story about that. First, we're at the Senior Bowl, and all the highlights you see on NFL Network after McCluster's drafted are basically from his Senior Bowl practices. The guy was just awesome down in Mobile that week. I believe he won the MVP of the game as well. But in the stuff that mattered, which is the practice, what the scouts watch, they don't even stay for the actual game. He was doing well. We were sitting – everything's outside, and it's just – GA seating on one half for fans, and then the other half's all scouts. So we're sitting there, myself and Adam Pellegrino, doing stuff for the website, and we're by a bunch of CFL scouts. And McCluster's making all these moves, burning all these linebackers in coverage, and you're hearing, And I just turned at him. Right. I was like, hey, he's not going to the CFL. These guys can they can stop the oohing and aahing. And he ends up coming to Kansas City, which is a bit ironic. But I think that the big – I guess the surprise that you said, people thought that, okay, you're going to go with a D tackle there, maybe an offensive tackle. You're maybe even a linebacker. You're looking at perceived needs. But I think what's overlooked is speed is a need for this team. I think the Chiefs were one of the slowest teams in the league last year on both sides of the ball. Obviously, with the first three picks, Barry McCluster, Arenas, that aspect was addressed. And, I mean, Chris Chambers, he was great vertically last year, but your fastest receiver, your downhill threat, is going to turn 32 this year, and that is your offensive playmaker. You need some young speed back there that's other than Jamaal Charles, somebody in the receiving game that can help open up the field, which hopefully opens up the field for Charles and Thomas Jones.
And we're talking football speed, because you'll see some 40 times. 4.53 was one of the ones I saw. I think that's what he ran at the combine. I suppose he ran a 4.39 at his pro day back at Ole Miss. That's clearly quicker. But whatever your 40 time is, was Jerry Rice fast in the NFL? Yes. He ran a 4.65. All right. And that's why he was there in the middle of the round. And he went to Jackson State Mississippi Valley State. But that's why he was there in the middle of the round.
Sylvester Morris went to Jackson State.
It was Sylvester Morris. Okay. Thank you. along with Walter Payton and a couple others. But anyway, you know, we're talking about football speed. And, you know, there are guys that can, when focus their eyes down the field, get a good track start after training, can run a good 40 time, but put the pads on and have to go get a guy, that speed goes out the window. These guys, when you watch the tape, and we'll get to Arenas in a second, they're football fast. And he is football fast and can apply all of his speed into what it is. And he's ungodly quick. And I think everybody said, running back, what are you doing? Well, and then you dig a little deeper, played wideouts first 2 years, and you see slot and a guy that gives them a lot of options. Now, I will caution this. So I like the fact that they got a playmaker. It's one thing to get a playmaker that wasn't productive. He was super productive at Mississippi. Mm-hmm. He was very tough. A lot of carries as a smaller guy. Not so many that he got overused, but some games touching the football 30-plus times. 20 reps at 2.25 for a kid who weighs 170. I'll point that out because and the bench press is no indicator of how you're going to play football, but it shows the kind of strength and I think the way his body is put together at being able to absorb some pounding. Jared Allen did 14 reps. Okay, as a defensive end, he did 14. This kid did 20. Now, Allen supposedly did 20 or so, 21 in training, but when it came time to do it, he did 14 reps. This is a kid that's more than just stop and start. He was super productive. I think you've got to like everything about him. The question, though, Josh, becomes, can Charlie Weiss and Todd Haley and that offensive coaching staff find a way to maximize his abilities? Because we heard Chris Wilson was a guy as a tight end fullback hybrid that they would find a way to use. They never did. I like this kid because he's big plays and touchdowns on a regular basis at Ole Miss, more so than Chris Wilson was at Pitt. But you do have to be able to apply the talent and not just make him a little highlight reel. Can they produce with him and find the ways to maximize his skills?
You know, the key to maximizing those skills is to find ways to get him in space. It's kind of what the Chiefs try to do with Jamaal Charles last year. When you have a playmaker, you give the athletes ball in space. That's what you want, and that's what you want to do with McCluster. Whether that's coming out of the slot and doing a slip screen to him, or maybe that's a reverse, or maybe it's putting him in Wildcat. And, you know, we saw two snaps of Wildcat last year. I don't know if you remember how that went down, but
not
I think
good.
Larry Johnson went -4, -5, and then that's all we saw. That with McCluster and Charles, or McCluster and Jones, or McCluster and who else, that can create more options for this Chiefs offense. I keep talking about, you know, kind of triangle of playmakers. Like, you know, you see a lot of motion late last season where Jamaal Charles would be back there with another back. Typically it was Tim Castile, a bigger blocking back, but a guy who could carry the ball. He would be in those situations on third downs and whatnot, while Mike Cox would be in the traditional I sets and the pro sets. And Charles would motion out, and they'd try and get the ball out there. Well, when they signed Thomas Jones, now instead of a Tim Castile or a Jackie Battle or a Mike Cox back there, you've got Thomas Jones possibly sitting back there if Jamaal Charles motions to the right. Now, let's think, if Dexter McCluster's sitting at the slot and to the left, you've got a playmaker on the left, you've got a playmaker on the right, maybe you've got Dwayne Bowe or Chris Chambers out there, you've got Thomas Jones right there in the middle. So there's just so many more options than they had last year at this time. And I don't think that his durability is a concern. We actually talked to Houston Nutt this morning. We had an interview with him where I put on KCChiefs.com in the morning. It's a great interview. It lasts about 10 minutes. And he compared Dexter McCluskey's skill sets to the best he's ever coached. And we mentioned Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders, Felix Jones, and Darren McFadden. And he went right down the line and said, this guy's right up there with all of them. He's durable. And Coach Nutt had no questions whether or not Dexter McCluskey would succeed at this level.
All right. We're talking with Josh Looney here about the Chiefs draft. Javier Arenas, the next pick in the second round. I love this pick. This is one, as I'm doing my Chiefs draft, this is the guy I would have taken at that spot. Super productive at Alabama. Very good corner. Played big in big games. Two interceptions in the national championship game. I think it was 12 tackles in the Tennessee game, with 4.5 for a loss. Just a guy that can really do it. And one of the best return guys in the NFL. Returns were a question mark. They had a touchdown out of Jamal Charles on one kick return against the Steelers. Otherwise, they struggled in that. Coverages got a lot better, but returns, they did not have a guy who could really make an impact in the return game. This team hasn't had that really since Dante Hall left. I think it's McCluskey and Arenas that give this team two more guys in return games. And you know, 3 yards, yeah, you got to get 3 yards when it's third and two. But games are usually won by guys that can flip the field, whether that's go all the way for a touchdown. I mean, do the Chiefs beat the Steelers in overtime if Jamal Charles doesn't take that opening kickoff for a touchdown? Because Pittsburgh quickly came back, matched the score, and went up. But without that touchdown, the Chiefs don't win that game. Guys that can flip the field in special teams are hugely productive. And Arenas, along with McCluskey, are both those guys. But I think he's got a real chance to be a very productive player as a DB, not just as a pure return guy.
Well, I tell you what, you said that would have been your choice there. I like that choice there. I was shocked when they took him simply because of two reasons. Well, the return situation and that weakness I felt was probably addressed in McCluskey. And now they have two guys instead of one that can return kicks. And then also going into the draft, if I were to look at a 4-12 team, and you know, there's not a lot of strengths on the field overall in position groups, but I felt cornerback was one of them. I'm obviously a Brandon Flowers, and myself, I'm a big believer in Brandon Carr as well. I feel like he's a guy, when you've got Flowers on one side, that's tested over and over, and I think he's done a very good job. Now, with that said, the fact that they got him, now I'm elated at that spot. I just didn't think that was going to be the way they went right there. The relieving Jamal Charles of the return duties eliminates a double-edged sword, because last year you're at a point where they tried to have other guys do it. They tried Lance Long, they tried Quentin Lawrence, they tried Mark Bradley, I think, at one point in the year, and no one could do it. And so you had Jamal Charles at one point getting 25, 27 total touches a game if you added in the returns, and eventually you could see him keep creeping up to where he was starting to reach over 20 carries a game just rushing. And so he was creeping up over the 30 total touches marks when you add in receptions and return yards. And you could tell.
Not to mention blitz pickups which are high collision. Situations out on the field. I agree. I mean, eventually it's going to wear him down. Fatigue equals injury.
And so you're in a double-edged sword position where we know she shouldn't be out there this many times, but then again, we don't have anybody else can do it, and we need a big play. So we're going to go ahead and put him out there because we can't afford not to. That problem's alleviated now. Jamal Charles will not have to return any kicks this year because you've got McCluskey, and then you've also got Arenas, and I guess you've got a full cast of other guys who are going to try and compete, but those are the two you've got to circle as the leading candidates to be the return man. And you know what? At kickoff returns, they might both be back. Those might be your guys.
You know, he is the size of a lot of guys that go in that second, third round as corners. And Scott Pioli did a great job in the second and third round of New England with corners from the Ellis Hobbs and Asante Samuels, you know, return guys as well. Corners that were return guys. He's done a great job. And I think what you find in those rounds is exactly just like Brandon Flowers. Guy's not quite the ideal height, or he's not quite the right 40 time. And that scares people off. So you go for that, you know, we want 5'11 plus, 6 foot, great, 40 time. Well, you know, they get a little tick slower, or they get just a little bit shorter. You know what? That half an inch or inch and a half will come into play maybe 3 or 4 times a year. Maybe not even that many times. And especially it depends on how you're going to use your coverage. I look at what New England had done and having great success with corners in these rounds, whether it's Antoine Winfield, who's been one of the better football players out there as a guy who was just like, you know, Javier Arenas and Brandon Flowers. Wasn't quite tall enough, so he didn't go as high as people thought he should go, or didn't go as high as maybe his productivity said, and he's gone on to be one of the better corners over the last 10 years in this league. I think that's a real nice fit for Arenas and a real nice comparable for Arenas. Maybe he's just a return guy. You know, and if you look at the 40 time on him, it's exactly 1/100th of a second faster than Josh Cribbs ran at the combine.
Now, Arenas did come up a little bit lame on the I believe he tweaked his hamstring on the combine. But I think it goes back to what you're talking about, Jared Allen and 14 reps. The combine results, I don't want to say they're bogus because they're not bogus, but they're such just a small piece of the pie. What was the big story after combine weekend? It was Bruce Campbell. And what were the thoughts on him? Okay, here's the Raiders pick at number 8. You got height, weight, size, speed. This is the guy, everything they like. And then Mike Mayock, I listened to a conference call with him, said, no, if the Raiders don't take him at 8, he'll be there when they pick again at 39. And he was still there at 60, 65, and wherever he went. I think he went in the 70s and the fourth round or higher than that.
Fourth round of the Raiders, yeah.
Yeah, so the Raiders give him the fourth round, and people thought he would go in the top 10, possibly, to the Raiders at 8. And it was all because of the combine workouts. So guys,
I talked to people that covered Maryland and Baltimore, and I said, what do you think about him going? The guy said to me, he goes, I am blown away. Because I cannot believe it. He goes, I knew he was on the team, but a factor in games? Absolutely not. But he clearly, I mean, he's a guy. And that, again, you're right. The combine doesn't, you don't just wash away. It means there are great physical skills there. Can anybody get it out of the guy? Well, good luck. You know, we've seen a lot of guys that just haven't gone that route. Arenas is just the opposite. Maybe the combine, he's a little, but super productive at a high, high level at a big-time program. That, to me, is exactly what you're looking for.
No doubt. You're looking for team captains. He was on the what? I love to practice
right.
team. So, yeah, you're looking at guys.
He's a good fit here.
These picks have Scott Pioli's fingerprints all over them.
All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about the next round, third round, fifth round, where the Chiefs got their last four draft picks. Josh Looney, Chiefs insider, with us here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs up to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20, he's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game! And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. More ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, it is the Red Zone. Soren Petro, along with Josh Looney, Chiefs Insider here at KCChiefs.com, as we are breaking down the Chiefs draft. We're at round number three. John Asamoah, is my pronunciation correct? You would know better than me.
Asamoah,
a guy who was super productive at Illinois by most of the things I read. Again, it's not personal opinion, but what I read is that his play tailed off a little bit this past year. But another guy who was very productive at a big, high level and at guard. And I think this might have surprised some people. And they're talking about him being guard center because in practice, when, you know, if all hell breaks loose, injuries are falling down, guys got to be able to play someplace else. The place he would take reps besides guard was center. So they're calling him guard center. Tim Grunhard, same type of deal, was a guard at Notre Dame that took reps at center. Chiefs moved him to center. He's a possibility at both those slots. Like, most people were thinking tackle after you signed Ryan Lilja and Casey Wiegman. They don't go that route. They go with Asamoah here. How surprised were you on that pick?
Not very surprised there at all. That's what we're talking about on our show on during the draft here on KCChiefs.com. We're like, there's going to have to be some beef coming up soon. They've got three small guys. What are they going to do next? And tackle would probably be where you thought they'd go, but it makes sense the more you think about it. This may be one of the deepest drafts in years. The big weakness, you know, worldwide, I guess, everyone who covers the draft, they said the weakness was the interior offensive line, guards and centers. And so you had Poncey off the board at that point, and then you had Ayupati off the board. And Ayupati was the number one guard. However, he's probably going to play tackle. He was a top 15 pick to the Niners. So to me, if you've got the number one center off the board, and the other option would have been J.D. Walton out of Baylor, was another guy up there. And then there's Asamoah, is a guy who's basically the number one, by most standards, natural guard on the board. If you take Ayupati and put him at tackle, you've got him who can play a little bit of center. It makes a lot of sense. Even with a team that has a Brian Waters, that has Casey Wiegman, that has Ryan Lilja, if those guys start in that order, or you put Nysmar over Wiegman, whatever, if Waters stays at left guard and Lilja's your starting right guard, you still have depth concerns there, because before Lilja signed, you had nobody that started the season at the right guard position. Mike Goff was gone, Andy Allman was gone, and I'm drawing a blank on who the third starter was there at the right guard
Jones
position. Wade Smith.
Or Wade Smith.
Wade Smith, right. Wade Smith is gone. So those are your three guys who started there. And then you think, well, maybe in Duke Way can do it, but they kind of had him at tackle. So this gives you depth. It gives you a guy who can breed when, you know, a Waters who's, what was he, 33, 34 years old this year. You know, he's getting down the line in his playing days. So now you might have someone to step in if an injury occurs. You have a guy who's going to compete probably. They'll give him a chance to try and get some time on that line. But more than anything, you're going to have a guy that fills a definite need in the depth of your offensive line.
And I would be shocked if he wasn't starting somewhere by 2011. I mean, I think he'll cut his teeth, as you said. They'll find places for him. He may end up starting this year, maybe because of injury, or maybe because he just flat out wins the job, because I know a lot of people thought very highly of him. But you mentioned Brian Waters also played center on this team, so you got a center guard combo there. Rudy Nyswinger's played guard in addition to being a center. You got a center guard combo there, and now Asamoah as well. And then Casey Wiegman, who I think will fight and his insurance to come in and compete and bring competition there into that spot. But now, and then throw in, we haven't even mentioned Ryan Lilja, who's played guard at a high level
for the
Colts.
And the key thing to remember with him, he was a left guard with the Colts. So that the people that still think Brian Waters is
moving
definitely
to
not going to play center, or, you know, they think that dream died when they signed Lilja and Wiegman. I don't think that's dead either.
No,
that could still happen.
I think they've got – it's a great situation. And I think the one thing that this pick says to me is they were taking best players available. They thought this guy was definitively the best guy on the board, because if you wanted to just try to fill the holes, you would have gone someplace else. That's why I'm very optimistic that he is going to be one of the best picks. And remember, Will Shields was the third-round pick for this organization. One of the best picks in this draft, because to me it clearly states, hey, this was the guy that we thought just absolutely blew everything away, because it wasn't their biggest need. So to me, I like this pick. I think it's got some of the biggest upside that they took. Next, they got a high fourth or fifth pick in the fourth round. They package one of the fifths, again, multiple picks, being able to use it to move up and get Tony Moiaki, just a guy that a lot of people, I heard some people saying that, you know, was the best tight end in this draft. has battled injuries but was very productive, comes highly recommended from Iowa, team captain. If you look at the highlights on him, you see him at the point of attack and goal line and knocking a linebacker off the ball. Good straight ahead blocker. You see him getting deep and catching the ball over his shoulder. Appears to have all the tools. Tight end is clearly a need for this football team. The injuries are what scare you.
Well, when you hear this pick and the trade-up, it sounds bad. And I don't mean it by Tony Moyaki not being a good player. I mean, you see, okay, the Chiefs got Tony Moyaki for a fourth and fifth-round pick. That's how you intro'd the show. You said, well, they had a fourth, a fifth. Well, really, there was about a difference of four or five picks in there between where they were at three and four. So they moved up to him. So basically, you swapped
They moved up
picks.
About 10 picks.
So you gave up your last fifth-round pick.
He gave up a fifth to move up 10. When people say he's two picks.
Right. Well, and you see it that picks. Way. He is two picks, but then again, it's not you traded for this player and gave
him. You didn't trade two picks for him. You swapped one pick and you gave him another one. But he is two picks.
He is two picks, but you understand what I say when you see you draft Tony Moyaki and you see just written there, you give a fourth and a fifth. Right there, you're already battling if you're Tony Moyaki because it's a fourth and a fifth round for this guy where it was a trade, which was a fourth, but you understand what I'm saying there as well. I think that this guy fits in the aspect of we talked about McCluster getting him in space and Charles in space. Well, this is a guy who can be an H-back, a guy who stands up in a two-point stance and splits out. What did Charlie Weiss like to do at Notre Dame? He'd spread some things out. What about Todd Haley in Arizona? Well, last year they didn't have the personnel groupings to do that. So now, you know, you might still see Brad Cottom with his hand in the ground and Leonard Pope in the three-point stance off the edge. But then when you're going to multiple receiver sets out there, you might have Tony Moyaki in the game off the line, maybe almost like an H-back, almost a slot/tight end, kind of like you saw Tony Gonzalez lining up to when he would go out there and they'd try and get some mismatches.
Well, and I think what he does, I spoke to Tim Grunhardt about this, who is now a coach in high school, but obviously a player in the NFL, and he said the most important thing that every team, or the most precious thing that every team has in the NFL each week is repetitions. And you just can't get enough. There's a limit to how much time you can spend on the practice field. Even if you're Dick Vermeil and you're going to keep guys out there for over 3 hours, you still can't get to everything. There's a limit to the number of reps that you have. And what they get with Moyaki, which you talked about being a true tight end, I think he's the best all-around tight end on the team immediately because I think he can block, he can catch, he can do all these things where Pope and Cotton probably are block first and, right. and catch second type of guys. O'Connell looks like a catch guy that you try to build up his, and I know he struggled to catch the ball, but a catch guy that needs to build up his body to be a block guy. Moyaki has the physical size to block, he has the ability to catch. But what you do when you add McCluster and you add Moyaki is, and you've got Thomas Jones, there are so many different looks that the Chiefs will be able to present on film for a defense. And whether they show it early on in preseason to get everybody freaked out and spread out those reps, or they just unleash it one by one by one in the first couple of games, when you get towards the end of the year and you go to prep your defense to play the Kansas City Chiefs, you will have seen so much stuff on film that when you try to sit down and say, okay, we're going to take 10 reps, because remember, you got to go against your offense. So your offense has got to get ready and do the stuff that they want to do. And then your scout team offense has got to try to show you the looks that the opposition is going to do. Okay, here's what it's going to be when McCluster's in the slot. Well, here's what they do when it's Thomas Jones and McCluster out there. Here's Charles and Jones. Here's Charles out of the eye. Here's Jones out of the eye. Here's McCluster out of the backfield with Moyaki in the slot. Here's Moyaki at an H-back with the fullback on the field and Jones in there. You present, you start to see where the thinking is and why having a McCluster, you know, because I thought Aurelius Ben at Illinois was a possibility there. Why you take a McCluster as opposed to one of those guys? Not that it's the right pick, but just the logic behind it is McCluster, you've got to respect, hey, he might carry the ball. I mean, he's in this deep slot position. They might run him, and they'll show it. I guarantee you he will get the ball. You talk about a reverse, but just kind of almost out of a split eye type of situation where he will get the ball, you know, ranging on a kind of a power sweep where he gets it from the left side and he's going to run right. And then when he lines up there, the defense on film has to go, okay, he might be coming out of the backfield. Safety's got to come up and pick him up if he comes out to the left. But if he's in the run, remember, this is a run formation as well. When you've got those different types of athletes, and Moyaki's one of them, there's so many looks you can show to them. It gets hard to I mean, you can draw it up on the blackboard once, but to practice against it, rep against it, and really feel it, but where it becomes second nature and reaction, is going to be tough for defenses if these guys are the players that the Chiefs want them to be.
Well, you can kind of see the big picture of this draft unfold, because at that point of McCluster, you're kind of like, ooh, why didn't they go tackle? And then and you see how the picks go on after that, and you say, okay, I kind of see what they're doing. With that said, I thought that after Friday that the Moyaki pick would be the most criticized pick of the Chiefs draft. They traded up for him, a tight end who didn't have a ton of numbers.
And he's not. And McCluster.
Had some health issues. Right. And that was the one where whether a guy gave the Chiefs a C, an A, a B, the sleeper pick was Moyaki. Everyone seemed to really like that pick. And I guess he was, if people remember, the number one tight end coming out of his high school class when he went to Iowa. And Eric Berry was the number one defensive back coming out of his high school class. So the Chiefs got whatever class of whatever year that was, they got two of the rivals' top players, mm-hmm. which is it shows you what athleticism they got there in the draft.
All right, so now we move to round five. The Chiefs don't have a pick in round four because of the trade up. Round five, Kendrick Lewis, safety at Mississippi. Cameron Sheffield, defensive end, clearly profiles out to going to outside linebacker in this scheme. Let's start with Kendrick Lewis. I think when we get to five, I think the first five, you're expecting results immediately. Mm-hmm. We get to these two, not that they can't step out. We saw Jared Page a couple of years ago immediately as a seventh-round pick be a factor. But you look at this and you say probably special teams and a projection into the future and more depth. Eric Berry's got to play immediately. Not that Kendrick Lewis can't move right past him because, you know, teams will tell you, and I believe they mean it. After you're drafted, we'll give you your check, but you step out on that practice field, you got to be better than the other guy because we will play anyone. So Kendrick Lewis could
step. I guarantee that's the message this Friday when they meet with Haley for the first time. You guys think you're pretty hot, you know, and now here you haven't done anything. So everyone's on ground zero, and they'll, you know, if they're on a high horse right now, they'll come back down to earth this weekend.
But for Lewis and for Sheffield, these are guys that look more like projection type players. And I think when you get round four, you know, I mean, to me, rounds one, two, and three have to produce. Have to start, if not not right away, but eventually have to become starters for you to have a successful draft. Now, you're going to miss on some guys, and you make up for it by finding the diamonds in the rough. And to me, the diamonds in the rough comes rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7. If you have a great draft when you hit on all those first, second, third rounders, and then you get a couple of diamond in the roughs, that's where you get one of those franchise-changing drafts, which New England had, a couple of those. What do you think about these two picks, where they went, what the upside is, and what the Chiefs will look for out of them here in year one?
Well, Lewis went lower than he probably anticipated before the combine because he ran a slow time, and teams were a little shied away from him on that. I think you'll definitely see him on special teams this year. He's another versatility pick. He's versatile. He's a guy who not only did he lead the team in Ole Miss in tackles in back-to-back seasons, but he led them in interceptions last year. He blocked two kicks. He led them in forced fumbles. So this is a guy who can tackle. He can obviously cover if second on the team in passes defensed, and then he can also play on special teams. So I think that all translates to a perfect special teams player to start your career as a fifth-round pick. And then, you know, he writes his own story after that and how he practices, how he plays when he's given a chance. I mean, there'll be times where he gets the DeJuan Morgan chances where there's injuries, and maybe he'll start a game one or two over his first 2 years in the NFL, and he'll get to make his own way through that. With Cameron Sheffield, I mean, this is your typical pass rusher defensive end who's going to play outside linebacker. Just look at the 3-4 outside linebackers here in Kansas City. Every one of them has played defensive end at some point in their careers. Pierre Walters was a rookie free agent, played defensive end at Eastern Illinois. Then the other three all started off their NFL careers as defensive mm-hmm. end. Andy Studebaker with Philadelphia, Mike Vrabel with Pittsburgh, and Tom Bahali, obviously, here in Kansas City. So Sheffield's just another one of those guys that you're gonna hope and project. And that's why it's hard about outside linebackers, because in a 3-4 outside linebacker, if you're drafting one, you're drafting a defensive end, and you're projecting him to play another position, which I mean, they basically did that with Tom Mahali last year, and I think the results were better than a lot of people thought they were going to be initially. He's still got a lot of things he's got to perfect this year, specifically spot drops, specifically on how he is on the backside against the run, slow playing those cutback lanes, because it's just not a natural switch from being in a two-point stance every single snap.
In a 4-3, basically being told, go get him every snap, and now having responsibilities. Yeah, it's night and day.
So Sheffield's exactly exactly what a 3-4 team is going to look for and when they draft a guy. And I think that spending picks there in the fifth round is the way to do it. If you looked at Scott Pioli and the way he drafted in New England, linebackers in general, he never sniffed on the first day. You had Jerod Mayo was the exception, and that same year he also took Sean Crable out of Michigan, who was a DN/outside linebacker, and he hasn't worked out for the Patriots. But you can tell when it comes to projections, he said he's conservative. He probably wants more of a sure thing. So having a projected guy in the fifth round is definitely, to me, the spot where you take that.
I think these are two guys that you know they're going to play, as you said about Lewis. You know you're going to get production in the special teams, and then they have the upside ability to grow into it. And like I pointed out, everyone wants outside linebackers up there in the first round. Ah, it's 3-4. You got to get them. Take a look at the guys who are the difference makers in 3-4 defenses and where they went, whether it's Joey Porter leading the league in sacks. He was a second rounder. Look at the New England guys. I mean, as you said, none of them were really high picks. James Harrison wasn't even drafted. Lamar Woodley was a second-round pick. That is a spot that, for the most part. Now, I think with the transition to the 3-4 more and more in the NFL, coupled with teams in college, I think, following suit, you might see some more guys that are ready-made to go out and play that type of position. But as of right now,
Few and far between now.
It's not a spot that you want to grab. All right, so when it's all said and done, you don't give draft grades.
I don't feel like I have what I think about a draft, but if I'm going to grade a guy who is basically spent his time while I'm at the Royals game on opening day and Pioli's on like hour number 36 straight in the draft room, who am I to say? Scott, I don't know about that pick there. I'm going to give you a B-.
So let's go with this. Let's go from this approach because as we mentioned last year, was a draft that, and I think part of it is because we've seen personnel changes. Have come about the whole unit of front office and coaching staff was not in place. It's in place now. And so I think now you're going to get a better reflection of what they figure to do in the future. But, last year's draft, we saw a number of guys that didn't make the team. And we saw guys, if you look back at it, Colin Brown ended up getting IR'd. Quentin Lawrence was on and off the active roster. Javaris Williams started on the practice squad. Jake O'Connell and then Ryan Suckup. And then, of course, up at the top, Jackson and McGee. A lot of those guys are still on this roster. In fact, every one of them is still the possession of the Chiefs as of right now. So that draft class has a chance to get a lot better. The class we see now, Barry, McCluster, Arenas, Asamoah, Lewis, Sheffield, how many of those guys on a regular basis, how many of those guys make this roster, make the 53 this year?
I'd be shocked if at least 6 out of 7 didn't make the out of training camp, didn't make the 53.
The 53, not the practice squad, but the 53.
And I'm including that in it. I just think with 7 in there, and you don't have any 6th-round picks in there, you don't have any 7th-round picks in there, and those are typically the guys that you're going to try and hide on the practice squad. Or 6 and 7. So I think if you leave one for a cushion, it's 6 or 7, I would expect 6 of 7 of those guys to make it. And it wouldn't shock me to see all 7 of them make the team right now.
I'd be crushed if 6 out of 7 didn't make it. I'd be surprised if all 7 don't make the 53. I don't think this is where your practice squad.
Because you can have redshirt. You can have redshirt guys on your 53.
Yeah.
Because only 45 play. Essentially, that's what, until Vrabel got hurt last year, that was what they wanted to do with Pierre Walters. He was a developmental guy who could run and hit and showed well in training camp. Said, okay, we'll give him a spot on the 53, but let's use a redshirt. Let's not make him active for any games. I think he played in 2 games. But so you can do that with a guy that you're this low roster.
So let's go to the next level. How many of them, let's say, have 12-plus games on the 45?
12-plus games on the 45. Let's see. I'll give that to – I'll just go by the names here. I don't want to pigeonhole those guys. I'm counting 4, I think. I could see going 12 or higher. And that's – maybe 5. That doesn't take into injury situations. Like a guy like Asamoah, I don't have going 12 games right now right away. But an injury situation, he could start 16. You never know. Or maybe he comes in and just shows right away. Because you look at guys that can contribute on special teams. That's the other thing, though. You could have 6 of those 7. 7 of 7 if Asamoah can do it. Because the positions that they are, Moyaki, the tight end, Sheffield, the linebacker, Lewis, the defensive back, all those guys, the three last picks of those seven are all special teams eligible. So it's not like you have a defensive tackle down there in the fifth round where either he needs to be suited up and getting reps or he's not going to be in probably.
I think you got five guys. And I think if you don't have five, if it's only four that hit the 12-plus, then if you look at the total numbers that are active out of this, like you said, special teams, we'll push it up to five-plus. It'll be six for Asamoah. He's the guy that I think is high enough that could right. have a huge future but not get a lot of actives. And then out of the two in the fifth round, I think you'll see guys.
You're hoping to get one if Lewis can play in 12 games on teams.
Lewis might get six. Sheffield right. might get six. And, you know, eight for Asamoah. And you look at it and you go, okay, there wasn't that fifth guy,
right.
but there was certainly plenty of 45 actives out of those spots. I think you're going to see a lot of guys make an impact. A lot of guys be a part of this football team that came out of this draft. Josh, great stuff as always. We appreciate it. We'll be listening next time. Next, anything you got? What's the next thing you got coming up here?
Yeah, tomorrow morning, an exclusive interview is about 10 minutes long with Houston Nutt, head coach at Ole Miss. He talks about Kendrick Lewis. He talks about Dexter McCluster. I'll put that up about 6 a.m. tomorrow, and you can't miss it. I'll lead the website. Just click it and listen, and then obviously this weekend we'll have coverage of the rookie camp that's going on here.
All right, very good. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the rookie camp here at Arrowhead. We'll take a break, come back, wrap things up here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
In today's hectic world, it's hard enough to find time to manage all your commitments and still find time to pursue a higher education. But at Columbia College, we make it easier. Classes are just 8 weeks long, and you can earn your associate, bachelor's, or master's degree on campus, online, or both. Apply now to Columbia College in Kansas City at www.ccis.edu/about-time. That's www.ccis.edu/about-time.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback, that is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader Squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, so Red Petro wrapping things up here in the Red Zone. The draft is done. It is in the books. We'll talk some more about it, more analysis in the weeks to come. Rookie camp coming up this weekend. More coverage here at kcchiefs.com. If you want to get your tickets, now is the time right here at the website, kcchiefs.com. Season tickets available on what should be a very exciting team this coming year. We've talked about the schedule a little bit last week. We really haven't had a chance to dive into that. We'll do that more over the weeks to come. But a schedule that I think shapes up well and a draft that I think was a very productive one. It's time to get to St. Joe. It'll be right around the corner before we're headed up to St. Joe and talking about Chiefs training camp. But the draft in the books. Appreciate your time. Always appreciate it. Want to thank Brad Young and Adam Pellegrino and, of course, Josh Looney for joining me here in the Red Zone. We'll see you next week in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Soren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.